Quickly, let me talk about the approach I shall take in this series. It's pretty easy. This is a 12-lecture series. It breaks exactly in half. In the first 6 lectures, I will be talking about Lewis's non-fictional works, particularly his Christian apologetics, and I will not mention the fiction at all. So if you're a Chronicle of Narnia fan, be patient, because in the second 6 lectures, I will cover all 7 Chronicles of Narnia and his space trilogy and the rest of his fiction, and then the fiction will be informed by the nonfiction from lectures 1 to 6. So that's basically how it breaks down. This is the first lecture, an introduction. Lectures 2 to 5 will focus on his apologetical and theological works, and this is what we'll cover in 4 lectures. Surprised by Joy, The Pilgrim's Regress, Mere Christianity, The Abolition of Man, Miracles, The Problem of Pain, The Screwtape Letters, and The Great Divorce. And we really will cover all those books in 4 lectures. Then Lecture 6, which is sort of transitional, will consider briefly Lewis's literary theory and will highlight his Preface to Paradise Lost and The Discarded Image about the medieval world. Then lectures 7 to 12, as I mentioned, will look at all 7 Chronicles of Narnia, the 3 novels that make up the space trilogy, and also another novel called Till We Have Faces, and it will close with A Grief Observed. So we will cover almost everything in the Lewis canon. Now, true to Lewis's works, I will attempt in this series not only to teach and instruct, but to challenge, inspire, and edify. Now, I promise I'm not going to preach to you or preach at you. But Lewis is someone who challenges your ideas about God, man, and the universe, and I would be untrue to him if I didn't challenge you in the same way. Basically, I'm going to challenge you the way Lewis has challenged me. But again, I promise this is not going to be preachy, but again, there will be times, let me put it this way, there will be times in this lecture series when I will tell you to stop, look, and listen, and think. And I will challenge you about things. Again, my approach is going to be totally nonpartisan and non-denominational, but I'm going to make you think about modernist assumptions that most of us take for granted. In fact, most of us think they've been proved when they haven't. They're just assumptions, like a belief in God is an assumption. So again, be ready to really wrestle with ideas in this lecture series. And I wish you Godspeed in that aspect of this series. Quickly, please take time to read carefully your course guide. I have provided you with a wealth of biographical material. Much of this information I will not have time to cover in this series. My focus is going to be the works themselves. I've also provided you an extensive bibliography and some appendices. So there's lots of information in your course book that I won't have time to cover. I want to focus on the works themselves. Finally, the latter part of this lecture I would like to devote to a quick overview of the life of C.S. Lewis. Now, C.S. Lewis stands for Clive Staples Lewis, but nobody called him Clive and nobody called him Staples. The story is that at about the age of 3, little Lewis sprung his head up and said, "From now on, my name is Jack." And from then on, all of his friends and family called him Jack, or sometimes Jax or Jacko and these weird names, but he's known as Jack. Now, out of respect, I will call him Lewis. I won't do the Amadeus thing. I'll call him Mozart. You know, I'm going to call him Lewis, but I want you to know that Jack is the name he generally went by. Now, as I told you before, Lewis was an Irish Protestant, and he was born in Belfast. And although we think of him in some ways as quintessentially English, he always maintained his love of Ireland and went back frequently. So he really is Irish. He was born in 1898, which means we just celebrated his centenary of his birth just a couple years ago. Lewis was raised by a passionate father and a somewhat reserved mother. And you can see both sides in his psyche or buildup. He's got that passion, but there was also a side of Lewis that was reserved and even a little cold at times. He didn't really share his family and personal things with friends. So there's both aspects in his makeup. Lewis grew up surrounded by books, and he had a rich imagination. Luckily, his father had books everywhere, and he told Lewis, "You can read anything you want." He did not forbid any books from the young Lewis. And Lewis grew up with a rich imagination. In fact, with his brother Warren, he called him Warney. He had a nickname for everybody, by the way. His brother Warren, they worked together on a fantasy land called Boxen, a land of dressed animals. It's sort of a dry run for Narnia. Already when he was young, he was creating fantasy worlds out of his mind. Again, a rich, imaginative childhood and a very happy one. Unfortunately, his happy childhood ended with the death of his mother in 1908. and his father's decision to send him to several boarding schools that he despised. At about the age of 9 or so, his mother died of cancer, and it was a very tragic moment for C.S. Lewis. In fact, the Freudian critics who are always out there have made a lot of, you know, Lewis's Christianity is somehow a repressed thing at the death of his mother. Maybe there's some truth, but it did affect him terribly.